Hello and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast for Thursday, January 20th, 2011. I'm reporter Elise Hugh, joined by managing editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
Ben Philpott from KUT News and the Texas Tribune.
I'm up to number two this week.
Second in getting introduced, yes. And finally, Reeve Hamilton, who is sitting in for Evan today. Hi, Reeve.
Which I think I did last week, which when Ben was also number two.
That's correct.
And the same joke was made.
Really? Just get used to it.
Well,
I'm hoping Ross and Evan will be sick next week. Maybe I can get to the first chair.
I can arrange that.
We have lots to talk about today. Our four topics today are the base budget that was rolled out this week, the Senate adopting its rules, the Texas U.S. Senate seat that's now in play, and the inauguration of Rick Perry and David Dewhurst, which happened on Tuesday. So why don't we start with the budget? Ross, a quick overview on this is just, as we've heard many times this week already, a starting point.
Well, you know, this is more a political document than a policy document. You know, they're coming out with this thing and they promised that they wouldn't raise taxes. Some of them, a lot of the Republicans have promised that they wouldn't use the rainy day fund. And so this is what a budget looks like if you fit it to that cloth. If you don't use the $9.4 billion in the rainy day fund, if you don't raise any taxes, any fees, do anything like that, if you don't include any increases in the budget for population growth and inflation, this is the budget you get. So what it is $156.4 billion. That's $31 billion smaller than the current budget. So it doesn't account for any of that growth or anything. And it means that there would be big cuts in virtually every area of state government,
health, except for border security.
Except for border security, which actually is a relatively small expenditure, but you know, they made their symbolic point. This is basically the document that you throw out and you say, okay, here's what the budget would look like if we did everything we promised over on this side. And what they're doing with voters and with each other is sort of this, okay, look, here's what budget cuts look like if we keep this promise, and here are the programs you would lose. Both of these are unpleasant things. Which one do you want to do? And so as the session goes on, they'll add programs back in. Some of the programs that weren't cut in this version will get cut. I mean, there's a whole lot of stuff going on here.
Right. One of the really touchy things is four community colleges get no funding in this proposal. And apparently, when they were laying it out today, Representative Dennis Bonin was not happy. The community college in his district is getting shut down. Obviously, that could all change.
Right.
But I guess that really makes it hit home for them that – you know, what the situation really is.
And that's the point, like Ross was saying. It kind of goes back to even Jim Pitts having that meeting with the Tea Party group in his county talking earlier. He said, you know, yeah, we're going to do everything. I'm going to do everything you sent me to Austin to do. By the way, that means your friend's going to get thrown out on the streets.
Right.
And so now Bonin's got that. He can go back to his constituents and say, you sent me to do this, but guess what? That means that our largest employer, gone. I don't know if it's their largest employer. It's obviously a big one.
State employees, obviously, also on the chopping block, according to this version or this base budget, state employees would probably have to take
furloughs. It was more than
9,000,
right?
Yeah. Well,
full-time state employees.
Not only would they, several thousand, have to face layoffs, or they could essentially opt for two furlough days a month, right, and 10% pay cuts.
And then there was this side document. You know, the state employees leads me to this. There was this side document that, you know, often gets ignored. The comptroller's office used to do performance reviews. Legislature got mad at Strayhorn, took it away, put it in the legislative budget board, and it's kind of languished there. They make recommendations, but they've been kind of quiet. This time, their list of recommendations includes savings and revenue enhancements of $1.2 billion. So everybody was like, okay, what is that about? And they're making all kinds of proposals to go to state employees. One of the things they're talking about is charging state employees to park in state parking garages. They're talking about charging more for dependents on state employee health insurance. They're talking about raising the price of health insurance for state retirees. A lot of this stuff would be funded on the people who don't get furloughed or
an extra premium if you're a retiree that smokes, right?
Right.
So
right.
The pensions
would
be smaller.
Not just retirees, but all employees. You know, if you're a smoking employee or one that chews, they just said tobacco use.
Well, I will say, as a University of Texas employee who has to pay for his parking spot every month, that doesn't bother me very much. If they make the regular state employees do it as well.
Yeah, it brings in like $1.7 million right, or something like that just to get people to pay for parking. So.
Right, it brings in some money. It's
right.
Funny.
It also looks like high-growth school districts would be screwed since they'd get no money under the current base budget formula. We're talking about districts up in the suburbs, places like North Dallas, McKinney, Denton.
There's no money in this budget for increases in enrollment.
Yeah.
You know, they add about 80,000 students a year state statewide to the public education roles, and they cost something to educate, but not in this budget.
Right. Well, we could just make class sizes bigger, right? Just throw those. Well, sprinkle them about a bit.
Too. That's one of the things they're talking about. You know, one of the things that you know they'll do as this budget goes forward is they'll say, how do we make some of these cuts and save the state money and not hurt the program? And one of the ways to do that is to say, if the state were to cut its funding for schools, maybe the local school districts would make up some of the difference and we wouldn't actually lose the programs. Now, it shifts the burden to local taxpayers. And in order to sort of make that a trade-off, then you say, well, why don't we get rid of some of these expensive state mandates like class sizes, you know, mm-hmm. the class size ratio and those kinds of things.
Well, Ross, could you put this all in perspective for us before we move on? Because we could certainly talk about this for the rest of the podcast and more. But so what's going to happen kind of now that this is out going forward? We're just going to see a lot of tweaking, I assume.
Yeah, I think there'll be a whole lot of tweaking. I mean, I sort of compare this to the beginning of the session. You take all the hostages, and then as the session goes on, you let them go one at a time, and you look like you're saving things. Mm-hmm. You're adding things back rather than subtracting them. So everything that's better than this will make you look heroic.
But in a movie, usually all the hostages eventually get released. That probably won't be the case this time.
No, this isn't that movie.
And is this going to be a harder process are they going to have to make this look even worse than normal because of the kind of boiling Tea Party, you know, pushing everyone to make sure that you had no revenue?
So really lower the expectations,
well,
if you want.
I mean, they're putting out a choice. I mean, we don't know what choice they're going to make. They put out a choice. They say, okay, look, you're going to have a budget that is this size, leaves the rainy day fund in place, and doesn't increase any revenues. And this is what it looks like in terms of state services. That's choice number one. Choice number two is, well, let's use some of the rainy day fund. Let's change some of these items in here that get cut, maybe increase a fee here or there, and restore some of these programs. That's choice number two. I don't know which choice this legislature is going to make. That's going to be one of the interesting things during the session.
I know we're trying to move on. Just real quickly, you know, when Congress has one of these big bills coming through, they will lay it out, take the hostages, and then the congressmen and women go back to their districts and have a lot of, you know, roundtables with community people, and then come back and, you know, they lay it out and let them know, hey, this is what's going to happen if we vote this way or this way. And then they go back and they vote. Is there going to be enough time for lawmakers now that they have, you know, is Bonin on the next plane back to his district to say, hey, by the way, we can do this, that's fine, but this gets shut down and get feedback that way?
Quick example. This budget cuts 10% from reimbursements for providers in Medicaid and other services. Mm-hmm. The doctors in the hospitals are already on the phone calling their legislators. You'll get a million different versions of that, but that's what's going on now.
But does it have to be people-based this year because of the grassroots and the Tea Party as opposed to the lobby-based?
It's always people-based and lobby-based. I mean, they'll hear from the Texas Medical Association, but they'll also hear from their general practitioner. I mean, you know, they'll hear from their districts.
All right, let's move on to Reeve and the Texas Senate's adoption of its rules.
Okay. Well, the Texas Senate today started, they adopted their rules for that will carry over for the rest of the session. And the big question was, are they going to do away with the two-thirds rule? Because that's basically the only block that Democrats have to sort of put a stopper on Republican legislation. Is there's a rule that says you have to have two-thirds consent of the Senate body to bring up any legislation for consideration. And last session, they gave an exemption to controversial voter ID legislation, so it did not have to go through that process.
Called a special order.
Yeah.
Right.
And they just adopted the same rules as last year, or last session, meaning that they kept that special order. So voter ID is still exempt, but other than that, the two-thirds rule still stands. There was still sort of a heated discussion about it, just sort of ceremonially. Senator Dan Patrick from Houston really hates the two-thirds rule. He would like to see it go. The Democrats, who are in the minority, really like the two-thirds rule. They would like to see it stay. So they had a talk about that. Senator Whitmire, who's the dean of the Senate, talked about how Thomas Jefferson said the point of a Senate was similar to the point of why you pour your coffee in a saucer before you drink it. And I don't know if he was showing his age or if I was showing mine, but I had no idea what he was talking about.
He actually met Thomas Jefferson and you didn't. Right?
But apparently that's what you do to cool things off. And that's their point, is that the two-thirds rule forces them to sit down and come to an agreement and consensus about what they want to talk about.
And Dan Patrick's argument has always been that, you know, voters have already spoken at the ballot box by electing a majority. And so he doesn't understand why the majority can't, a simple majority, if you will, can't easily pass or more easily pass legislation.
Right. And he's even been, he's talked some of modifying his request to get rid of it completely, you know, take it to 60%.
60-40, right.
Instead of,
well, 60% conveniently puts the Republican majority in control of the agenda. You know, I mean, the argument here, the kind of the civics argument here is, do you empower the minority or is it winner take all? You know, if one party or the other has control of the Senate by one vote, shouldn't they control everything? Or are you going to say, well, no, actually voters gave them 51% and gave these guys 49%, and you still have to listen to the 49%. And, well, you know, so far we've opted for giving the minority a voice.
And one of the reasons that this rule, I mean, it only took 16 votes to get rid of the two-thirds rule completely, right, if they wanted to. And I think one of the reasons that Senator Patrick has not been able to get it is because it's not just Democrat-Republican that are worried about this two-thirds rule. You've got rural Republicans that have been interested in keeping it,
right,
for, you know, well, and future needs to block rural-urban kind of disputes.
This was Whitmire's big case. He spoke to Brian Birdwell specifically as one of the new senators, and he said, you know, what about farm-to-market roads? What about, like, we don't really need to fund those, do we? You know, most people don't.
Birdwell's from Granbury, and his district stretches down to Waco through a bunch of rural country.
Right, and he said, what about if 16 of us decided to be pro-choice, and I know you're very pro-life, we could just do that. And he was just sort of speaking right to the issues that spoke to the heart of Birdwell and his constituents. The most interesting thing about the discussion, I thought, was the first person that stood up to support Dan Patrick was Senator John Corona from Dallas, who was the Republican that refused to go along with this whole doing away the two-thirds rule for the voter ID. And he said the reason was he has gotten over 150 calls, 150 to 200, he said. So it might be up to 200. It's like the shortfall, right? Right. It's somewhere in that range.
I got some calls.
And he just didn't realize like how passionate his constituents were about getting rid of this two-thirds rule, which is interesting, sort of a microcosm of the whole debate, right? It's also like, well, I don't know. I'm not as read up on the Founding Fathers as I am the movie 1776, but Georgia switches his vote to before independence, even though his constituents are against it, because that's what he feels, and he feels that they sent him to represent them, and his values should overrule theirs. So I think that's an interesting example of, seems like last time Corona personally was not for this, but he realized his constituents were, so he decided to change. And this is an interesting little, if anyone has thoughts on the role of a legislator.
Thank you for that lesson from the musical 1776.
Well? Yeah, then okay. He broke out in song.
Okay.
Open up a window. That's the only thing I know from
1776. It's not even the best song.
Oh, okay.
Holy cow.
All right, let's switch topics to the U.S. Senate race, which is now on because Kay Bailey Hutchison made an announcement last Friday that she will not be seeking another term.
No,
ben,
and that
take
made
it from here.
Everybody just, you know, throw their name into the ring, especially
we mean
the
everyone.
Side.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, holy cow.
You've got people that are barely statewide elected officials running for this, and but we have this week had Roger Williams receive the nod from Papa Bush,
right?
We've had Michael Williams,
who's resigning from the Railroad Commission in April,
officially say, "Hey, I'm in."
Well, he hasn't officially said he's in. He's officially said, "I'm leaving." You know, we're waiting for the other foot. Guess where it'll fall.
Whatever happens, he will not be a railroad commissioner.
Right. There you go. You still have speculation that another railroad commissioner, Elizabeth Ames Jones, might run, right?
Elizabeth Ames Jones' website still says she's in the race. Ted Cruz is in here.
Oh, yeah. He announced
right,
today.
The
that's right.
Solicitor General announced this morning.
And then, of course, you have David Dewhurst, who has been kind of considered at the top of the heap for the last, 18 years we've been waiting for Senator Hutchison to resign. And
his phone number is 512.
And so he's at the top of the heap. I was talking to a friend today who, used to work up in D.C. and you know, spent most of her time in money and politics up there. Sorry, that was my phone going off. Anyone heard that buzzing? She just told me that she thought this was something that Dewhurst would absolutely win because he's got the most money. It's his race. He can win the primary and win the general without the National Senate Election Committee that is run by Cornyn, without them spending any money at all in Texas, which frees Cornyn up to spend money in
spread the love,
spend it in the races that they are going to have trouble or are closer to being able to take over a Democratic seat. So you know, when it comes down to money, Dewhurst has a lot of money. Roger Williams has money too, or at the very least has a lot of backers. I mean, he was in charge of fundraising for the Republican Party in Texas.
Right.
So he knows where to go to find the money if he doesn't have it himself.
Sure.
I don't think we're through getting candidates. I think, you know, this is the last time this seat opened. I mean, every time a Senate seat opens up, you get a mess of candidates. Hutchison ran in a field of 23 or 27 or something like that. You know, there's been some talk that Michael McCaul might get into this, who has the same ability to self-finance that Dewhurst does. I just think it's an open field. I think you could get somebody, you know, this has happened more in other states than it has here, but, you know, somebody famous could step up and say, I want to run for that seat, jump in, have a bunch of money. Yes, sir, Governor Schwarzenegger. You know, you can.
Chuck Norris.
Right.
Oh, good old Chuck Norris.
Where's Deborah Medina in all this? That's what I want to know.
Right. I've been seeing some things on the internets about Deborah Medina, too.
Public policy polling out of North Carolina. Mm-hmm. They came out with a poll yesterday, day before, on the Senate race, and had Dewhurst at the top, had Medina in there somewhere, single digits, I believe. But of course, with a field of 10, you know, single digits means you're
that's just starting point. I mean, you know, Dewhurst just came off of a statewide ballot. You know, the voters just looked at him, they know that name. Roger Williams hasn't been on a ballot, but has the money to sort of get his name out. You know, if somebody like Michael McCaul or another member of Congress runs, they're news in 31 congressional districts, right? Nobody knows who they are. They start out at zero, but the question is, how do you have the means to become well-known, either because of your money or because you have some great idea? Mm. I think we're going to see a bunch of more candidates.
So one thing that I think is interesting about all of this is the timing. 2012 means that all the people, the current lawmakers in the state house, would have to resign in order to run, right? Because they're either up for their, say, for example, state Senate seat or up for the U.S. Senate seat. You can't be concurrently in the federal race and the state race. Is that correct?
Right, right.
Unless you're a statewide elected official,
well,
or like Dewhurst?
No, he's not on the ballot.
Oh, he's not.
He's not on the ballot.
He's not up again until 2014.
So you can run for... you can run the Lyndon Johnson rule. You can run for president and run for Senate at the same time, right? Remember
mm-hmm.
that?
But, sure.
Dewhurst gets, and all the other statewides, if they want to, get a free run here because they're running in midterm. So this is a 2012 election. None of them are up till 2014. So Dewhurst wins this. He's a senator. He loses. He's lieutenant governor. Either way, you get to come home. So the senators this time, usually the Texas Senate is staggered. So the half of them run 1 year, half of them run the other year. We're doing redistricting, so all 31 of them will be on the ballot in 2012. So they have to choose. Going to run this race or that race.
And that would affect somebody like Florence Shapiro?
Who has said she was in this race. She doesn't want to be in it again. So,
okay.
But somebody in that
Dan
situation.
Dan Patrick?
Well, right, Dan Patrick. Anybody like that has to choose.
Anybody that wakes up and says, maybe I will be a senator.
Say, you look like a senator in the mirror this morning, you know.
Well, yeah, I figure you don't get into politics unless you think that about yourself, right?
Well, you know, the other thing this does is it uncorks this Republican thing. All these guys got elected 8 or 10 or 12 years ago. And if you're ambitious and you're down in the middle of the roster somewhere, you know, I really like Rick Perry, but I wish he'd move on. I really like David Dewhurst, but I wish he'd move on. Kay Hutchison's moving on. It raises the prospect that the lieutenant governor's chair will be open.
Right, and that race has basically already begun. Jerry Patterson and Susan Combs both threw their hats near the ring.
Right, near where a ring will be if there's a ring at all, right?
They're pointing in the direction of the ring.
All right, so for the last topic is my topic, which is, you know, I guess... If you think all publicity is good publicity, then Spark Energy really made a name for itself this week. Here we were sitting outside on the Capitol lawn listening to Rick Perry talk about Texas, when all of a sudden the sound of a buzzsaw is above us. Yeah, it was
a
super loud plane. It drowned out, you know, all the microphone feeds too, which I... according to the people who watch it on television, and I don't know if you were recording.
You know, I will
them.
Say that KUT's feed was just fine.
That quality public radio.
Right.
Well, so Spark Energy decides to fly a banner on a single engine plane that flew pretty low above the Capitol and around and around and around in the middle of Perry's speech. So I have no idea what he said for a good
it showed up
4 to 7 minutes.
It showed up. The first run over the Capitol was as he was thanking, doing a lot of really saying a lot of really nice things about servicemen and women, talking about their service to the country, their service to Texas, the horrible battles they have to fight, you know, on. And the reason I know this is because I started reading his speech. You know, the press received an email of his speech as it was about to be sure. delivered. So I got to just look down and follow that and kind of, you know, see what his lips were moving. And
well, it caused a bit of a controversy because, yes. you know, folks immediately on the grounds, the inauguration staff was very distracted. They were on their phones trying to figure out what was going on. Spark Energy? Is this a political trick? You know,
I got to ask, I was watching this in my office because you were down there, but what did security do?
Security was frazzled. I mean, people were kind of whispering to each other and, you know, getting on the phone. But
They're going to build a giant ceiling over
the dome, right? Exactly.
And Spark Energy apologized later in the day.
Yeah, but
after they got all that publicity, they did great. I mean, somebody at Spark just got a pay raise. If this had not been
a company advertising and it just been some individual out for a joyride, that would have been an interesting thing.
Right. I mean, that's
what do you do then?
That's a totally different story. Spark Energy, as it turns out, is an energy company based out of Houston. Right. The CEO has donated to the Rick Perry campaign.
So it was friendly
obviously
fire.
It was enthusiasm. It was excessive enthusiasm, which happens sometimes. Ultimately, it doesn't really matter, right? He was still inaugurated. He's still the governor.
He was already sworn in when this happened.
But I talked to his chief of staff afterwards. That was all anyone on his staff that I talked to wanted to talk about was plane gate.
Right. It was a huge outrage.
I will say, to Perry's credit, I didn't even see him pause. I mean, there was no stutter. There was no look up at the sky. You know, nothing. I kind of expected him to at some point make a joke about it, just because it was.
He might have. You didn't hear him.
All right.
Well, that's true.
Well, on that note, thanks everybody for listening to the Tribcast this week. If you have any comments or questions for us, you can email us at podcasts@texastribune.org. For now, on behalf of Ross, Ben, Reeve, and our producer, Todd, I'm Elise. Thanks for listening.